WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Charles Band is one of Hollywood's most prolific producers of science fiction and fantasy films. He's made about 85 movies in 20 years. But you've probably never heard of most of his films, and you definitely didn't see any of the recent ones in movie theaters. He makes movies that are quick and cheap and go direct to video. Puppet Master, Dr. Mordred, and Trancers are some of his titles. They're distributed by his company, Full Moon Entertainment. Before his direct-to-video days, he did produce movies for theaters, some of which you probably have heard of, like Reanimator and Ghoulies. What he's doing now just may be the marketing wave of the future. As for the content, Puppet Master is about an ex-Nazi who brings his murderous puppets to life. Leech Woman spits leeches onto her victims. Trancers is about a cop named Jack Death who time travels to prevent zombies from taking over the world.
With a couple of exceptions, all the films that I've produced or made or directed at Full Moon have been my own creation, so to speak. I come up with the basic idea, the title, the campaign. Those elements usually come first. And then depending on what picture it is, I'll either develop an actual story outline and then, cause the picture to get made and find the right writers and director. Or I'll actually, just come up with the premise, the basic, thumbnail sketch of the story, and then different writers will, be involved in that phase. I mean, the original idea is really not much more than that. The premise of Bad Channels I came up with along with the title. There's a difference between that and taking a story by credit, which I do sometimes when I actually write out, the three acts and I really give the writer a blueprint of what the thing should be all about. But the most fun I have with this whole enterprise is coming up with all these crazy ideas and characters and creatures and critters.
So what's the crazy idea behind Bad Channels?
Bad Channels, I think we went too far with a crazy idea because it actually fits a little or falls a little out of the Full Moon norm. But in a nutshell, strange space alien comes to Earth who's a collector, and he takes over a radio station. And through that station, he is able to monitor with some of his space-age paraphernalia and gadgetry. He's able to monitor everyone visually who's listening to that particular set of songs. And, of course, he zeroes in on attractive young ladies, and we soon learn as different events unfold, because he takes over the radio station and kind of hijacks the whole place, that he's a collector of Earthlings, and specifically Earth women, Earth babes. So he zaps them through, the ones that he likes, and they wind up coming into this stuff that he's brought, and they wind up being reduced to 12 inches, and they're in these glass jars. And, of course, the stories about our DJ and a friend of his who wind up, trying to save the day. And, in fact, at the end of the picture, his mission is kind of aborted, and he has to go back, and all the Earth chicks who were trapped into these jars regain their normal size, except one. There's actually one left at the end of the movie who is forever trapped in this 12-inch little body. And, of course, that was by design because we made a picture about half a year before that did very well for us called Doll Man, which is our copy line is 13 inches with an attitude. And I think one of the reasons why Doll Man was so bummed out is he had no women. So now we have Doll Chick. We have a little girl for Doll Man.
This reminds me of a movie I saw with, great British actor, forgetting his name.
Okay.
And he finds this ray, I think, to reduce people to a few inches high. Do you know the movie?
Oh, sure. The name escapes me as well, but wonderful.
Anyways, yes.
And all part of the inspiration for all this stuff.
So did you grow up watching a lot of
watching it, and also I still am a big comic book fanatic. I was in love with all the early Marvel comics of the early 60s, and I truly feel what Full Moon really are the comic books of the 90s. We're making, to a degree, it's a throwback to the serials of the 30s and 40s, but at least with the pictures that we've made that have premiered directly in home video, they're all designed to be sequelable and seriesable, and those that really work, in fact, do go to series. We have our Puppet Master series, our Trancer series, our Subspecies series. And a lot of what we're doing is exactly what the comics did in the early 60s. So we're beginning to cross over characters and team people up. And in fact, apropos Bad Channel's Doll Chick and Doll Man. We just completed a movie that'll be out early next year, which is called Doll Man versus the Demonic Toys. So Doll Man teams up with Doll Chick and they fight the Demonic Toys, which is another little franchise that we began.
My guest is Charles Band, the head of Full Moon Entertainment, which produces science fiction and fantasy films. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Charles Band makes low-budget sci-fi and fantasy films. Now, you got into movies really as a boy. When you were 9 years old, you moved to Italy, where your father was making, what, spaghetti westerns? So he got his start in America?
Yes, my dad worked with John Huston for years. They did. My dad was assistant director on Red Badge of Courage and Asphalt Jungle, and made films here in the 50s when I was a real little kid. And then he made two horror films himself that both did quite well. He made a film called I Bury the Living with Richard Boone that plays a lot, and another picture called Face of Fire with Richard Widmark. And but he was being pulled into television, which was what was happening here in the 50s, and he was not into that at all. So he decided that it was time for the family to move to Europe, at least for a year. There seemed to be a lot of action in Italy, you know, Hollywood on the Tiber. And he promised the family we'd be back in a year. You know, as a nine-year-old kid, that's the last thing you want to do is to move to Europe. You don't even know what Europe is, let alone having to leave your friends. And we stayed 11 years. That 1 year turned into 11 years. So I was there from age 9 to age 20, and I don't regret a minute of it.
So what kind of movies did your father make in Italy?
He made a lot of spaghetti westerns and epics. He made everything from The Avengers, starring Steve Reeves, to...
Steve Reeves, oh boy.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I played Steve Reeves' son in that movie when I was a little kid. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Little guy with curly hair, and that was me.
And Steve Reeves was Hercules in the films.
Oh, yeah. This film was made... I mean, he was very popular at the time, so I guess it was made... It was his second or third film after the two Hercules films. Then he made a bunch of spaghetti westerns, pictures like A Minute to Pray, A Second to Die, working with actors like Robert Ryan and Joseph Cotten. And so it was a great place to be, to grow up. We didn't shoot them all in Italy. He shot some in Spain, some in Yugoslavia, you know, back then what was Yugoslavia. And so it was wonderful. And I loved the business from the very beginning, and I really grew up on a movie set. So he put me to work. He said, look, if you're into this, then you should really learn, you know, how it all works. So I really did a little bit of everything as a kid. I mean, you know, including a lot of real grungy jobs that, you know.
Like what?
I mean, I think the worst job I ever had, and this was during a summer break, is back then, and it's a technical thing, but today there's a machine that numbers your negative. You shoot film and you get your negative developed and you make your prints. And this machine, every 2 feet, puts a number on the negative so that the negative editor can identify when to cut and blah, blah, blah. Well, back then there was no such machine. So you sat there with a fountain pen and white ink, and you had to hand number those numbers. And it's something, I mean, if you think about it, an average film shoots 200,000 to 300,000 feet of film. I mean, I numbered one movie for a whole summer. It was terrible. But, you know, you're in that environment, you understand the editing process, and it just makes you appreciate the whole process of filmmaking, not just the kind of the glory stuff, like, you know, being a director, which is, you know, kind of the captain of the ship, but it's good to know how it all works. So I went to like the ultimate film school of all time. I grew up in this, and he made me do everything, which I really appreciate now.
Now, what was your movie education like outside of making your father's movies with him? Growing up in Italy, did you get to see a lot of American films, and did you get to see them in English?
No, I actually have seen most of the great films you see as a kid in Italian, so that was an interesting sort of... And then years later, I would see them again in English. I would say it was a combination, a diet of some wonderful films that were made in the 60s, especially European and Italian films, like Fellini films and Pasolini films and Antonioni films, and that plus, you know, the great music of the 60s and comic books.
I find it interesting that, you know, someone like yourself who makes what, you know, would be considered by a lot of people just like schlocky, cheap films, right? You just grew up in movies. I mean, you've always been interested in movies.
Right.
You've always been serious to some degree or another about movies.
Mm-hmm.
So how come you didn't aspire to make small art films or really, you know, personal, independent films? Instead, you're doing like teen genre films.
Well, again, if you look at the body of work, you'll find that the large majority of the films, even though they are genre films, they are all pretty credible films. Some of them do have, they're certainly little morality plays. They've never been hard, violent movies. I've never made a slasher film. I think you'll find that in many of the pictures, women have real strong roles. They usually save the day at the end of the film. And I love these movies. I mean, I enjoy making these films. And I never felt like wanting to do anything else. I'd like to see Full Moon again become bigger and better and be involved in all sorts of entertainment, which is going to be fascinating in the future. But I really, you know, I enjoy making these pictures. And you know, someone asked me a few days ago at one of these retailer things, why don't you make maybe some erotic thrillers? And, you know, to me, that's like a fate worse than death. I prefer to go out and sell real estate than have to make yet another version of Fatal Attraction. It's like you can't avoid these movies now. They're like, you know, and then now the big studios are making them with big budgets and famous stars. And so, no, I have no taste for that. And that's not to say that there isn't life between fantasy and erotic thrillers, but I do enjoy our genre.
You obviously know a lot about marketing movies. So I want to talk with you a little bit about how that works, because I think the marketing of movies has changed a lot in the past decade or two. And let's see what insights you can share with us about that. First of all, your movies tend to go direct to cassette, mm-hmm. You know, direct to video. And I always think of that as a sign of failure, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like the movie, the distributors had so little faith in the movie and they were so unable to interest theaters in it mm-hmm. that it ended up going direct to video. But you make movies to go direct to mm-hmm. video. Mm-hmm. Why do you intentionally do that?
Well, the truth is today, first of all, the home video business is the largest slice of the revenue pie, number one. It's really no longer the tail that's, you know, wagging the dog here. We're looking at a business that's bigger than the theatrical business. And the theatrical business over the last few years has really changed radically. It's a very unforgiving marketplace. You have a situation today where genre films especially are being made with colossal budgets. You know, Jurassic Park is approaching $100 million. Terminator 2 is $80 million. And these are all films in the genre that I'm making films in and have been for 20 years. So when the theatrical marketplace releases those sort of mega-budget movies and they spend $15 to $30 million over a weekend promoting them, you know, the margin of error is pretty phenomenal for a small movie that wants to go out there and compete. It's impossible to compete in that sort of marketplace. And it's certainly not wise as an investment to go out there and risk, you know, bet the whole company on the release of one movie, which is what invariably happens when you're a small company, because, you know, the majors have history and banking and you know, big balance sheets to absorb the few losses or the more than few losses they have during the course of a year. But a little company can go out of business if it does that. So that's a combination of the theatrical marketplace becoming real tricky, and I think a marketplace now reserved for event movies.
So here's a problem I see. I think most people, when they go to the home video store, rent something that they wanted to see last year, earlier this year, a couple of years ago, and they missed, mm-hmm. or something from the past that they want to see again mm-hmm. or that mm-hmm. they missed. Mm-hmm. But it's usually going to be something they've heard of. Mm-hmm. If something goes directly to video, you never heard of it. It wasn't advertised on TV because it was never in the theaters. Your mm-hmm. friends didn't go to see it because there was no place for them to see it. So how do you let people know a movie exists when it's going to direct-to-video?
That's a good point. Well, the philosophy behind Full Moon, and again, I've done this now for about 20 years, and I'd say for the first 16 years, I made 8 billion different mistakes. You do that, and you learn how to survive in this business. And the pictures I made have always universally made money. I've made a lot of good, you know, well-received commercial films. But as far as how to really put it all together under one roof, one umbrella, and do something building towards the future, it took a lot of years to, you know, kind of get to where we are now with Full Moon. And the idea from the beginning was, and I say this with a certain amount of humility, I mean, it's tough to make the statement, but I would think that the end goal for Full Moon is to be to fantasy what Disney is to a family entertainment. I mean, that's where I would like Full Moon to be. And the whole idea was to create a brand label awareness, something that the public, both the video retailers who have to stock in the first place and the public who need to discover the films, would begin to trust and build a loyalty towards the label, not the specific films. That was the design from the beginning.
But who shops for videos that way?
To give you an idea, and you could talk, you know, at random to a number of video stores, there are about 30,000 video retailers in this country, and we have something called the Full Moon Video Retailer Fan Club, and we have about 15,000 members, 15,000 retailers in that fan club. So about half of all the video retailers in this country are members of that fan club. Many of them have a Full Moon section, and they now, over the last year or so, since we've proven ourselves to be kind of unique in the business, they are no longer buying a specific title. They're just buying the next Full Moon film.
Charles Band is the head of Full Moon Entertainment. This is Fresh Air.